Welcome to the Compose Like a Girl podcast. I'm your founder, host, and composer, Jocelyn Hagen. My Compose Like a Girl initiative amplifies female-identifying composers, helps conductors diversify their concerts, and works toward more equality in music programming and commissioning. I've been sitting down for conversations with some amazing composers, and I want to invite you into these deeper explorations of art and life. I hope you leave with some inspiration, just as I did. On today's episode, I'm sharing a recent conversation I had with Angelica Negron, a fabulous Puerto Rican-born composer based in New York. I met Angelica on an award panel for teenage composers, a program through the American Composers Forum. She was a delight to converse with, and I left our discussions with a desire to listen to her music. I wanted to know what kind of art came out of this tiny, colorful person. Her music did not disappoint. It has great energy and a real playfulness of spirit that I find truly enjoyable. Hello, Angelica.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to connect again after a few years. I've had such a fun time listening to your music. Over the years, I've been, every now and again, checking out your new projects. But in the last week or so, I've really dug deeper into some of your music. And I'm just really enjoying it. And a word one word that keeps coming to mind is the word play. And I mean that in the best possible way. And I think you even use the word play in your biography, right?
Yeah, it's a really important word for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
would you describe composing as playing with sound?
Yeah, I think, yeah. And when it's at its best for me, it's when I'm playing with sounds. When things are not working so well, it's when I forget that I should be playing.
Aha. So in the part of your creative process, if you go astray, it means that you're not being playful anymore?
Yeah, and that I'm losing touch with that part of myself that's doing this because I'm passionate about it and I'm curious about sound and want to discover new things. It's that I get in my head about deadlines or imposter syndrome or all of the other fun things that and the noise in my head when I'm under pressure creating something. And once I reconnect with that playful side, things usually work much better.
Yeah, there's definitely a dark and more serious side to what we do. And I think composers are often hesitant to use that word play, especially because we want people to take us seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I also think that play is a very serious thing.
It is a very serious thing. And I think it's an incredibly important and essential element in the creative process. It looks different for many folks. But I think you're totally right. I think I sometimes stayed away a little bit from that word because of wanting people to take me seriously. I think there are a lot of things against me in the way I look. I'm 4'11". I have purple hair. I'm a woman. I'm Latina. There's many things that already come with me and that sometimes people don't take me so seriously. And I'm also obsessed with toy instruments and things like that. And it took me a little while to realize that true freedom was just being unapologetic about those things and not letting those preconceptions or misconceptions and superficial narratives dictate at all any creative choice or any choice of language that I make when I'm referring to my own work.
Oh, I love all that. And yes, there is a lot tied up in what we look like and how serious then we are taken. My parents always had this motto that was work hard, play hard. And I feel like I feel like that's exactly what composing is you're working hard at it, but you're also working hard at playing.
Yeah. Playing could also be a part of work. It's a tricky balance to maintain so that playing doesn't lose what makes it play and the fun part of it. But I think it's been a lot about realizing that the two are not mutually exclusive and they are in constant conversation with each other.
You were recently honored with the 2022 Hermitage Greenfield Prize, which is a big deal. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, this includes a large commission set to premiere in 2024. Have you figured out what you're creating yet?
I've been thinking a lot about how I want my music to live outside the concert hall. I had a really beautiful residency at the New York Botanical Garden right before the pandemic started, and I wrote a piece titled Chorus of the Forest, in which we had 100 voices across the forest and speakers and robotic instruments. And it was really fun to work on and really beautiful. But for me, the main takeaway from that was just seeing the piece come to life with people that were there just to watch the botanical garden and then stumbled upon this piece. Not new music people necessarily. And my mom traveled from Puerto Rico to see that. And it was really special to see. It was the first time that she actually got what I do, because it was the piece living and breathing with the people, not in a sterile container in which, you know, you clap because that's the polite thing to do. So I've been wanting to do more things like that. And I knew this piece, it's beautiful Sarasota. I've never been there, but I've seen the pictures. It has beautiful beaches. So I thought of writing a piece that would score the sunset to be played outside. And it's a half an hour or so piece that unfolds as the sunset is setting, and so that people can kind of have that experience at, almost as if it's scoring a film, but the film, it's the sunset that is happening in real life. And so the changes in color and texture and light and all of that will impact compositional choices that I make as I'm writing it.
I'm so glad you brought up Chorus of the Forest, because I definitely wanted to ask you about that. 100 voices, you said, and it was in the botanical garden. How many people do you think came in and actually experienced the work?
I think it was something between 2,000 and 4,000.
Wow, that is so wonderful. I love it. So has it been performed by other groups in other places yet?
It hasn't. I think it's so site-specific, and I wrote it in a way that it's a pretty ambitious piece in terms of the setup. But that said, the piece, it's kind of a modular piece that has instrumental parts and also has these what I call choral modules, because they were just repeating on a loop with tiny breaks for the vocalist, obviously, to rest. But they would, even though I thought of some as in an order, they would be experienced by the audience in different orders, depending on the path that they took through the forest. So those choral modules, I also think of them as self-contained, that could be also sung someplace else. So those are, you know, out there for people who want to sing them. But yeah, Chorus of the Forest was a one-time thing that I am hoping I get to relive, particularly and hopefully in Puerto Rico at some point in time. And also hopefully in other places too.
Is this something that could be translated into a work that is performed in a more traditional concert venue? Or do you always want it to be in nature, inside the forest?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I can envision the different choral modules. I could see them even one after the other in a concert setting. That I think that's fine. Once you have the backdrop of the forest, it's hard to top that off. But I think I could see the choral modules being performed in a concert setting. But the piece as Chorus of the Forest with the electronics that are transitioning between the path as you walk through the modules, with the robotic instruments that welcome you to the forest and that also are there when you exit, like that piece, I think it belongs outdoor in a forest.
Well, and there's something really neat about singing outside. It feels so different. You don't have the resonant space around you that really helps with it. Mm-hmm. It's more naked. It's more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And there's some real beauty in that.
Oh, definitely. I totally agree. And I mean, the forest itself also has its own soundscape that is a very much an intentional part of the piece that I am not at all having any control over. And that's big part of what I am interested in the piece too. And then people interacting with the forest too. There were some moments in which, I was also very intentional about that, and we had some signs about like shuffle the leaves as you're walking. And that's a big part of the piece is how the audience interacts with it and how they listen to the sounds that have always been in the forest, but when you bring up the attention to your ears once you're there, that also becomes part of your experience with the work and with the place.
Oh, yeah, I love that. I love that there's an interactive element and that you're inviting the audience members in to just be a part of it. That's really lovely. And there just aren't enough big choral sound installations out there. I think it would be great if more choirs ventured into that as possibilities. I think it's scary, but hopefully the pandemic, when we were all making music outside and singing outside, maybe inspired some bravery to try and do something like that. But anyway, it's just a really cool piece, and I'm glad that you brought
Oh,
it up.
thank you. I'm hopeful that we get to do it again and either at the Botanical Garden because it's just such a magical place, but also hopefully in other places as well.
I encourage you to check out today's episode notes, where you'll find a YouTube link to experience a sample of Chorus of the Forest, performed in 2019 among the fall leaves of NYBG's Thane Family Forest. Another piece I was really excited to talk to Angelica about was The Blue Hour. Released by New Amsterdam Records and Nonesuch Records, The Blue Hour is a song cycle that Angelica collaboratively composed with Rachel Grimes, Sharon Nova, Caroline Shaw, and Sarah Kirkland Snyder, who you might remember I spoke with in our first episode. Set to excerpts from Carolyn Forché's epic poem, On Earth, the music follows one woman's journey through the space between life and death via thousands of hallucinatory and non-linear images. The cycle was commissioned by and is performed with the Boston-based chamber orchestra, A Far Cry. Angelica, how did the Blue Hour come about?
The Blue Hour feels, to be honest with you, like a dream. It hasn't been easy. It's a pretty ambitious project, but I feel incredibly grateful of being in the company of my favorite composers, not my favorite woman composers, just my favorite composers. And also now some of them that we didn't know each other before, and now also good friends, and all of them actually good friends. And yeah, this was a far cry. The string orchestra from Boston, and they're amazing, and they had the vision of putting us together. I think they thought that, you know, we would make a good song cycle together, and little did they know that all of us were fans of each other. when we had our first in-person meeting, which was at Sarah's house, and we had a nice sleepover there, I remember that day us talking to Rachel Grimes about, it just came out that for most of us, she was such an important figure in our earlier years, and still to this day, that, I mean, I think Sarah described transcribing some of her piano music because she didn't have any sheet music available. And I remember Rachel's, the band that Rachel Grimes was a part of, being also one of the first times I heard something that I was like, oh, I didn't know classical music or music with classical instruments could sound this way. Yeah, so I think it was really cool to see how, as the project started happening, that we found this shared kinship of like just very deep connections with each other's work. And likewise, Penelope changed my life when I first heard it too. So that was just something really special.
Yeah. Yeah. When Sarah was on, I also talked about Penelope and how it rocked my world when I heard it. Yeah.
I could talk about that forever, but I'll share a super quick anecdote of when I was teaching a very young composer's class with the New York Philharmonic, a program that I was a teaching artist for almost 10 years. I brought Sarah as one of our guest composers, and she played an excerpt from Penelope. And I remember one of my 11-year-old girls in the class, an awesome composer, and her mind was literally blown when she was listening to it. And she said, I didn't know that you could put a drum kit and the violin and that you could combine those things and make it sound like that. And it was just the joy of seeing her articulate in words that discovery of like, didn't know this was possible, and now I'm hearing it. And and as someone that was super into pop music and just kind of suppressing that part of herself and her music, and then that being a moment in which she was like, oh, okay, I can do this. That's something just, I think, really special.
There's also a lot of play and fun to be had in the collaborative process. And I think so much of it is just finding where the point of connection is going to be. And then saying, okay, now go.
Yes. Yeah. No, and finding within those, where are moments of more collaborative process and where are moments of each unique voice shining through and sharing something particular in a way that resonates with their own personal story. I think all of us were scared about is this going to make sense when we all come together, and we were very pleasantly surprised that it came together, and it was like magic when we heard it for the first time. We were like, wait, what, how? And this motif that I'm using here, it comes back in Caroline's piece here, or Shara's using it in this way. It's just
wow.
Yeah, I mean, and we had a very, very simple system of, you know, the poem as our anchor, and also like a shared like Dropbox folder that we were just throwing things as we were working on them. And also we had like a map of keys just to keep that in mind, but we were never precious about those things. It was a place that we would put things so that we would listen to them as we're working on them, and somehow it all came together.
Let's listen now to one of Angelica's songs from The Blue Hour, titled Black Map. This features Shara Nova as soprano.
A black map of clouds on a lake. blackened book leaf, straw and implements, a blue day book hidden in my bed with his
currently are in a band called Balloon.
I am, yeah. And I was in a band before I started composing too. We've been together for a long time. It's one of the reasons why I make music. It's because I started making music with my friends. I didn't know you could be a composer in the sense of like writing music for concert instruments, because I never played anything by someone that was alive when I was studying violin. But I had a band and I was very active in the DIY scene in San Juan and electronic music. And, you know, it's a small scene. So I would, you know, play violin in a track from like a hardcore band or and metal bands would open. We would open for metal bands, actually. They would not open for us. We would open for them. And it's still to this day actually pretty fluid scene in which, you know, and everyone is in like 10 bands. It's a really important formative part of like of my music making is that community in Puerto Rico. And yeah, and it's still to this day where we find ways to keep going, even though it's been now a little over 20 years that we've been making music together.
Wow. Yeah, that is a long time for a band to stick together.
A long time. It helps that Jose and I are the founders we're married. So that helps. And also, I mean, right now Balloon is really family, truly. And it's our closest friends. And it's exciting to see how it evolves and grows, you know, as people, you know, we're a diaspora band. So some of us are in the States, some are in Puerto Rico. Now we also have, so it started with all Puerto Ricans, but now we've expanded to new friends we've made in the US. And now we have other folks that are, you know, honorary Puerto Ricans in the band. And so it's really nice to have something that kind of evolves with you. And I mean, it's one of the things that has kept us together for a long time besides our friendship. And it's nice that we get to share that with other people too.
Yeah. Yeah. So you sing in the band, right? And play violin.
So I used to play violin. I started with playing just vintage Casio keyboards. We were instrumental with keyboards and a CD player. It was a long time ago. And then I started to teach myself the accordion and then was playing more acoustic instruments, violin and accordion. I started writing songs with words and I did not want to sing them. I mean, I love singing, but not in front of people. So I started to ask other friends to sing the songs I was writing. And then I decided to just like give up on that and sing myself. So that it has been an evolution. And now I mostly sing in balloon and play accordion and do also a lot of the string arrangements and a lot of the writing with Jose, my husband, and it's a collaborative band, so everyone is putting in their own thing too.
And here is La Nueva Ciudad from Angelica's Brooklyn-based electronic indie band, Balloon.
Baby,
So this is interesting. When you came up to the States and you went to graduate school, mm-hmm. Did you tell your professors that you did this kind of music, that you were in a band? And
no, it's funny. I never shared that with anyone, even in the conservatory. I kept those lives very separate. I don't know. I thought that I needed to, again, is the being taken seriously thing, because it's not only a thing that I've struggled with moving here and, you know, being from Puerto Rico, but it's also something that I struggled as being, like, at that time, one of two women that were studying in the department, and also in a really small department, and also someone that has, like, I was almost done with my violin degree, and then I switched majors. So there was also, you know, this perception of, like, oh, like, I wasn't good enough in violin, right? And, or so I think there's also a lot of classism involved and that is also tied to colorism, which is a bigger conversation. But I would say that there's a lot of pop music is not welcomed was not welcomed as much at that time in the conservatory. So it felt kind of like lowbrow kind of thing. So, and I mean, that was my community back then, the bands, and it felt like where I was really able to be myself, but in a way that I was not getting by being in the conservatory. So it actually took me a little while to understand that, you know, I didn't need to separate these parts of myself, and that actually the thing that I kept trying to push down in my concert music, which was my love for experimental pop and my experience in being in bands and pop music and electronic music, was the thing that was going to make me different in my concert music. But yeah, I did not share that with people.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. And I wish that I didn't have the same experience, but I also had a very similar experience.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think, it was part of that time. And I do think it's getting better.
Yeah, I do think so. But I do still encounter, you know, people in places in which it's still very prevalent. I think, you know, there's a big part of why I'm so passionate about teaching artists work and working with younger composers and mentorships is because most of us learn about music, a lot of our experiences through an instrument, and there's a wrong and right way of doing things, but we don't get to play with sound the same as we do when we're, you know, exploring, like in preschool, with colors and material and our materials and visual art. That's very normalized, but with music, it's through there's a skill behind it in terms of, like, even if it's early childhood, it's less exploration and more follow a beat, or like it's skills based, and we don't get to play or explore as much. So it's and composition, it's mostly taught in buildings. And so it's really that academic thing, it's embedded structurally in it. And it's really hard sometimes to get away from that and to embrace that there are many other ways of making music that are as valuable, if not more, to our own musical experiences and that are very formative, but academia kind of tells us otherwise.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating. And I do think it is changing. And I also have always loved that when you talk about, I play the piano. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet there's two different ways that I approach sitting down at the piano bench. It's, oh, serious. I'm gonna play exactly what's on the score, and I'm mm-hmm. gonna do it with great technique. Or I'm gonna sit down and I'm actually just gonna play around. Mm-hmm. And those mm-hmm. two sides of it. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. You know, it's one of those, how is it, the standards for music education, and improvisation and composition are on that mm-hmm. list of mm-hmm. things that need to be taught in the schools and music education. And so many people don't teach it. And mostly it's because they really don't know how.
Yeah. And so many people are super scared of it. Like me included, you know, when I used to be so scared of the word improvisation, and I compose by improvising. It's just maybe slightly different pace or pressure, but it's all coming from a place in which I'm playing and improvising. So it's, but it is, it could be, you know, especially for people that are trained in conservatory, it could be very scary, and it's because we don't get to play in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've loved this conversation.
Same here.
Thank you so much, Angelica. This has been just such a wonderful conversation, and I've loved connecting with you and realizing, you know, how many similarities there are in our experience. And I knew once I met you that I would love to spend more time with you someday.
Same here. It's been lovely to talk to you more, and I hope that we can do this in person some other time. Thanks again for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you, Angelica. I remember when I was a young composer, I loved surprising people. Look, this beautiful and or highly complex and thoughtful music was created by me. But after a few years, this got old. I was frustrated that people were so often surprised at my career choice, or that, by some miracle, I was good at it. Like it or not, our physicality in the world sends many nonverbal messages. For Angelica, like me, it was hard to take up space in the world of musical composition. And then, compounded on that, infusing elements of play and childlike discovery into her music might seem a risky choice, for it could be just one more reason to unfairly dismiss her work. But you can't fight who you are, and I'm thrilled that Angelica has experienced so much success. She stays true to who she is, making a name for herself on her terms. May we all be so fearless and genuine. Compose Like a Girl was produced by Justin Schell, Laura Kreider, and me, Jocelyn Hagen, with special help from fellow composers Erica Malpass and Addie Struckman. The Compose Like a Girl theme music was composed by cellist Cicely Parnas. Thank you all for helping me with this vision. Thanks also to New Amsterdam Records, Nonesuch Records, and Good Child Music for their permission to use their recordings on today's episode. You can learn more about Angelica Negron and her music at angelicanegron.com and by following her on social media. Check out the links in our show notes, visit jocelynhagen.com/composelikeagirl, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram to listen to the music we talked about today, learn more about the Compose Like a Girl initiative, and check out past episodes. You can also find choral programming ideas by checking out the Compose Like a Girl choral series through Graphite Publishing. To ensure that we can keep bringing these conversations to you, please consider joining our Compose Like a Girl Patreon page and giving what you can. And you can subscribe to the Compose Like a Girl podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're so moved, rate us on Apple Podcasts and share it with a few friends who you think will find inspiration. Until next time, trust your instincts. Be brave and unapologetic for your talents. Thanks for listening.